Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello! This week I'm talking to my friend Angela Barnes, a badass comedian who you will have seen and heard being the queen of topical comedy, most often all over Mock the Week and News Quiz. She's properly ace, as you'll hear. We get our hearts as well as our brains out in this episode. First up, thank you loads if you came to the live show last Sunday in Manchester. It was so good! A much-abridged version of that show will be out very shortly as a podcast. Alice Nutter and Amy Gledhill were very, very, very funny guests, please. The next live show is at 3 p.m. on Saturday, 23rd of February in Thirsk. The same brains behind the brilliant Deer Shed Festival are running a brand spanking brilliant-looking new podcast festival called the Podcast Social Club. Go to podcastsocialclub.com for tickets. Now, when I do live shows, there's way too much content for one podcast often. Like we made the one on Sunday in Manchester, we recorded for like an hour and 40 minutes, and that will become like an under an hour podcast. So I'm going to turn the excess content into a mini episode exclusively for my $20 patrons. If you don't know what a patrons are, please go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. It's a magical world where you can swap any spare money you have for stuff to do with this podcast, like extra and exclusive content, discount codes for live show tickets, guest recipes, and all sorts of shit like that. Only other admin to let you know, really, is that my stand-up show, Hench, is on tour for the first half of next year. But tickets are now on sale, and dates are being added almost by the day. And there's, if you live somewhere and there isn't a date for there yet, bear with me. They're coming out as and when the theatres that they're in are able to put them on sale, but there's tons of them on there already. I'm at the Soho Theatre throughout January, and that's all on their website. And from the 1st of February, starting in Bristol on the 1st of February, I go all the way around the UK and Ireland and beyond. For tickets to everything, go to jessicafostercue.com, and then there, click on My Doings, and that's where I list everything. Okay, let's get into this podcast. I have some warnings, I'm afraid. We do talk about dysmorphia, and not from a point of complete resolution, sadly. It's a bit sad in parts, our conversation. You'll hear two women being very imperfect feminists or icons. But it's honest because we are all work in progresses. Okay, and so also we're going to talk about self-harm. And we talk in detail, including numbers at one point, about a particular diet. Not from a place of recommendation ever. You know, that's not my bag. But it's in there because it's real and it happened. Okay, we're in Angela's super cool home in Brighton, and we're eating some really yummy leftover soup that she'd made a day or two before. Get in. This looks lush, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And it's my first soup of the year.
Is it?
And I make soups at least one a week, from October, probably through to March.
Yeah.
But I'm quite seasoned about it from that point on. My ex used to get really annoyed at me and be like, just because it's April, we can still have a soup. It's like, nope.
No, you can't.
I'm done with it now.
It's winter food.
You're having a salad.
It's like stew. You wouldn't have a stew in the summer, would you?
No, unless you're a pervert.
Yeah.
Mmm. It's so nice.
Oh, bless you.
You said it wasn't spiced. Really lovely.
It's a little bit spiced. It's, are we recording?
Yeah.
We're recording. Because you said you want to do a podcast about food. I love eating food. I am bad at cooking food.
Oh, well, the podcast's about eating, not about...
Oh, that's all right then.
Not about food per se. Whew. But you can't really talk about eating without talking about food. Actually, maybe that's an episode to try one day.
Talk about eating but not food?
Yeah, you'd have to. It would have to be like... Because the things that people have eaten that aren't food are probably so few and far between. It'd have to be a collection of lots, asking everyone that question and putting all the answers together.
What have you accidentally
I've never asked that before. What's wrong
have
with
I
me?
Have I ever eaten anything?
Have you ever eaten anything that wasn't food? Like a bit of Lego or something?
Oh, I swallowed a tongue piercing. Of course I did.
I've done that.
I did. And I remember I was about 19 and I had my tongue pierced. And I woke up in the night and the little ball thing had got loose.
Oh, God.
And I woke up and I sort of choking on it. And then I swallowed instinctively and it had just gone.
Yeah.
And I so panicked and I phoned the emergency doctor.
Oh, really?
And they went, just eat some bananas, it'll be all right. I never
eat
was aware
bananas.
Of it coming out. Yeah, could still be in there. Maybe I've got a pierced intestine.
You'd have to have a fairy's anus to notice a tongue piercing coming out, wouldn't you? No one's going to notice. Ooh, there it was. Like a pearl. There'll be someone somewhere that's got their tongue pierced specifically for the joy of that, knowing they're pooping
out. I'll just loosen the little ball before I go to bed.
Because it does. I won't. I've still got mine.
I haven't had mine since then, actually.
God, that's so funny. What a brilliant answer. And I would have, if you'd asked me, have you ever eaten anything that's not food, I'd have struggled. But I've definitely swallowed at least three tongue piercings, but not for years. Because they'll be fine for ages. And then when you need to change. Well, one of the many reasons you should I should change it more often than I do. But it's when it just keeps coming out when you're eating.
Yeah.
So I think
the thread just wears, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like the screw bit, but.
Anyway, tell me what's in this soup, because it's way... So, you made it out like it's going to be rubbish and it's snazzy.
It is really boring. It's carrot and swede and parsnip.
Mm.
With a bit of onion, some cumin, some curry powder.
You said it wasn't even spicy. I knew it's lush.
It's my go-to winter comfort food.
Mm.
And I go to the supermarket and get those... You know, you can just buy a stew pack. It's like a crit.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they?
Make a soup out of it.
It's literally got those things in it usually, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're in Brighton in your lovely flat. This is so cool.
Oh,
and you've
thanks,
got a
babe.
Study that your neighbour carpenter built for you.
I have. I feel very lucky. Like, it feels very self-indulgent.
Not at all. You've made your workspace nice. It's a sensible thing to do.
I do love this room. And I made it, you can see it, like, it's bright coloured. But basically what happened is the carpenter built it for us and then he got a painter mate to come and paint it.
Wicked.
So what colour do you want? And he gave me a colour, one of those, like, Dulux colour charts. And I went, I want it to look like this Dulux colour chart.
Oh, my God,
and
it's so...
Exactly what he's done.
Oh, wow. Do you mind if I take a picture of it,
actually?
Yeah, please
do.
That is so true. It actually does look...
I can't pick one colour, so can I have all of them?
It literally looks like a Dulux flowchart. That is so true. Get the maximum number of colours in. What a brilliant room.
So I'm somebody who... I don't do well in, like, grey situation. I like bright light. I like... You know, so there's lots of lights in
here. Yeah, lots of little bits of lights up in there.
Yeah, and just lots of bright colour. And that just lifts my mood loads. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to lift my mood. I've
That's
learned
good.
That after 40 years.
Yeah, God,
go,
well, it
oh,
takes
actually,
that long
what
sometimes,
I need is light
it?
And colour.
Yeah.
And then I'm all right, generally.
Yeah. Oh, God, this is so lush. I can feel my body thanking me for this.
Oh,
my bowl of vegetables after...
Well, you've been on the road, haven't you, all day?
I've been driving all day.
It's impossible to eat on the road.
No, the other meal I've had today was from Greg's, Angela, so that's why my body's going, thank you!
But it's so... Because when, you know, we're comedians, we're on the road a lot. We were talking about this earlier, weren't we? That my passenger seat in my car is my dinner table. Like, when you get in my car earlier, and I was like, I'm so sorry, I just get the crumbs off the...
Yeah.
Because we eat on the go all the time.
Yeah, and you have to.
It's hard to eat well.
And we were saying that if eating in the car ever gets made 100% illegal, where it's a bit a grey area. I'll starve to death. Either that or we'll have to get sort of just a feeding tube straight into our stomach the Greggs.
Yeah.
Or whatever is available on the road.
Liquidise a vegan sausage roll and have that pumped straight in. That'd
what do you
lovely.
Make of them?
I like them. I don't like jackfruit.
No, me neither.
I just can't get on with it.
Yeah.
And in my head, I think what I've realised is I don't like food that's pretending to be something else.
I agree.
So if in my head I think I'm getting a sausage roll.
Yeah.
Then I'm just like, well, this isn't a sausage roll, is it? You can't. And there's something icky about that. Whereas the Greggs vegan sausage roll, I like it as the thing it is.
Right.
But I don't buy into it tasting like a sausage roll.
There's nothing sausagey about it. But it's got the same, I think it's got the same herbs.
It's got the nice herbs. It's got that sort of, and that's how I sort of, I've taught myself to eat more vegan food by going, but it's not like a burger.
Yeah.
It's a separate thing. And if you like that separate thing, that's fine. But if you're going to bite into it, comparing it with a burger.
So true. I think when I first started flirting with veganism at all, and I don't do it very well, we'll get to where you are.
Oh, I am not a good vegan.
No, yeah, I mean, I shouldn't use the word.
Let's talk about that later, because I've got...
Well, especially because as well earlier you said you're in it for the environment, which is me too.
Yeah.
But I did that thing when I first started to sort of really have a go at it, of getting every synthesized, processed, fake version of everything possible.
Yeah.
And then actually you're like, this is just as unhealthy as someone who has bacon and sausages every morning.
It's not processed food. It's really processed.
It might not be as carcinogenic or whatever, but I'm pretty sure this isn't ideal.
No.
I'm not feeling great. And I found I was having loads more sugar.
Yeah.
And just loads more carbs. Yeah. And it was just much harder to be, I don't know. I think the other thing I didn't like about the absolutism of it is it felt like one massive set of rules was being completed. So all other, not that rules is a shit word when it comes to eating, I think, but all other considerations went out the window. So literally every time someone went, that's accidentally vegan, I'd be like, I'm having eight now.
Well, that's it. Well, when I found out Oreos were vegan.
Yes, terrible
news. I was just like, how am I so fat? Oh, because I've exclusively eaten Oreos for a week. That's why.
Biscoff biscuits.
Yeah, terrible. So it doesn't, vegan doesn't necessarily mean good
healthy.
For you.
No, not at all.
And it's very... It's a weird thing. I don't use the word vegan. Well, I do sometimes for a shorthand because it's just easier than going, well, I sort of don't eat meat and I don't eat dairy and I don't eat this, that and the other, but I'm not is an ideological vegan.
Right, me too, so, not one of the religious ones.
So I feel like using the word vegan makes it sound like I subscribe to a thing I don't subscribe to. And then I can understand why that's upsetting for people who do subscribe to
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Because then they're like, well, you're not, though, because you do X, Y, Z. And I'm like, yeah, I've got leather shoes on. I can't.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and also I eat fish and eggs and sometimes some dairy.
Well, this is the thing for me, because there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason for the way you feel the way about how you want to eat is how you feel. And you, I don't think you have to explain yourself.
No.
But I think sometimes people who have subscribed to that whole ideology... you're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I don't like using the word vegan, but I don't know what else to
say. It's just simpler, especially if you're out somewhere and you know that if there's going to be, there's enough times where it's just quicker to say that.
It's a shorthand.
Than it is to say, but if you've got some incredibly sustainable fish, I'd be interested in what that is.
Well, I can't be asked to have a conversation,
I'll have the chickpea.
If I say vegan, I know I'm going to get something that is definitely okay.
You know what you said then about the religiosity of it, like not being able to subscribe to the whole remit. And I think there are loads of vegans who don't either, but they still do all the things or whatever.
Yeah.
But what hit that home for me was doing one of these with Monica Galletti. And she told a story about in her restaurant, a vegan had come in and they'd phoned in advance and checked that there would be vegan options. And there always is. But they go so out of their way because of the religious nature of it to make sure that no animal products whatsoever will have touched the stuff that the vegan person gets, which is all, this is all good and well, until that particular guest that came with a group of friends, and one of the friends had, the normal tasting menu, and the apparently vegan was trying this like it was all amazingly sourced, but this sustainable British venison or something. And he was trying all the meat things, and she was like, the whole kitchen team are fucking livid.
Yeah.
Because we have gone so out of our way to make sure that you're not, we haven't offended your really serious religion. And in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, but I fucking probably want to try the snazzy thing. Because it's like, and I was like, oh, I get it though. Actually, I'd never thought about it from the point of view of the people running the kitchen.
Yeah.
I just thought, but then you also like, I want to try other things. But
also,
generally
isn't
be a
the
good
customer
person.
Always right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know. It's so, it's so tricky because I did, you know, there's certain things. There's a thing, there's a Facebook group I belong to called Vegan Brighton or something. Mm-hmm. Vegans in Brighton. And my main reason for belonging to it is just because you get good tips of who's doing, you know, the good vegan burger at the minute, or, you know, where pop ups pop up and things like that. And obviously, being a vegan in Brighton is probably being easier than being a vegan anywhere else on the planet. Right?
Yeah.
So, but there's sometimes things pop up there and I just go, I feel guilty being in this group because this doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And there's one this week about figs, about whether figs are vegan.
Oh, because they've all got dead
fly in it. Because
they've
got dead wasps in them.
Oh, dead wasps,
like,
that's
it.
That is a dead wasp in every fig.
I cannot give a shit about a dead wasp. I can't.
I can't bring myself to care about honey. Well, wasps are cunts, aren't they?
Wasps are absolutely what good are wasps doing? Eat them. Eat the figs and eat the wasps. Like,
come the apocalypse, we'll all be scrabbling over the last delicious wasp.
But I have a weird sort of veganism where I'll happily eat prawns. Because I don't see, I'm sure ecologically they serve a wonderful purpose.
Yeah.
But they are just insects, really, aren't they? And I think I was trying to work this out before I spoke to you, like what my, because there's no word for it. I don't. Flexitarian isn't right.
It's just such a disgustingly
and such a
horrible word. What a shitty
middle
word.
Class fucking. So I'm swearing on your podcast.
Oh God, it's this very sweary podcast.
It's a fucking good.
Of course, it's my podcast, Angela. It's so weird. If I had started, I'm going to make an entirely child-friendly podcast.
I just find that it's I care most about mammals. Yeah. If I'm honest, maybe birds. But fish, I mean, I have a weird thing with fish anyway, because I'm an ichthyophobe, so I'm actually scared of fish. I can't look at them. I can eat one, though, if it doesn't look like a fish.
So, say it again.
Ichthyophobe.
Ichthyophobe.
Yeah. So fish. It's a proper phobia of fish.
Incredible.
And I...
oh, God.
So I had a moment recently. You're right for me to wander off.
Yeah.
I did my first Cats Does Countdown.
Brilliant.
Recently, like, filmed it. And it was so funny, because they do two episodes back to back.
Right.
And the first episode was being filmed and I was in makeup for the second episode, right? So I'm sat in the makeup room and they have the relay from the episode that's being recorded in the makeup room. But it was a snake, right? There was a snake in that episode.
Oh, fuck me, I fucking hate snakes.
See, I don't mind snakes. I wouldn't particularly want to behold one, but, you know, I can be in a room with one.
People are going to check if you're scared of snakes, though, but they probably won't with fish.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they had, Rachel Riley had this snake she had on her and they were sort of doing all this stuff with
she's
it.
She's fucking nails, isn't she?
Oh, she really is.
She's
like 8 months or 7 months pregnant or
is
something
she?
As well.
With a
doing
snake
it. Yeah,
on
a snake
her.
On her. But anyway, so we were watching it in the makeup room and laughing about it and they were like, oh, I bet you're glad you're not on this episode. And I said, well, yeah, I said, I'm not too bad with snakes. It'd be a different story if they brought out a fish. Ha, 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 ha. Right? Get to our episode.
Oh, no.
And, well, what it was... So when you're doing the... Have you done
No.
So when you're doing the game...
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you're focused in it. And while the clock's going on, you know, they do, like, silly set pieces.
Oh, yeah, I've written
and stuff.
For it. Yeah.
So they had this set piece. But while you're actually playing the game, of course, you don't know what's going on around you at all because you're playing the game, right? So they had this set piece where they turned it into like an undersea adventure. They had like, I don't know exactly what went on because I wasn't paying attention. But when the clock went, boo, and I looked up, I'm sat next to Jimmy and he's got a fish hanging out of his mouth.
Oh my God.
Right? Now it turns out it wasn't real, but I swear to God, Jess, I thought it was real.
Shit.
And I just lost my shit because I've got a proper phobia.
Yeah,
it wasn't funny. Like, I did not find it funny.
Fuck.
And I was nearly... But John Richardson was like, I knew you were scared because most women don't jump on me. I was nearly in his lap. I was just like... And Jimmy, it took him a while, Jimmy, to realise, like, I'm not mucking him out here, I don't like it. And then he took it out and put it under the desk. I don't know how it will look in the edit, But I was just like, get that fucking thing away from me.
They will fucking love that, though. It'll be like that time Mel Gidroich did that burp that she didn't know was coming. They love a thing that's genuine emotional reaction.
But it really affected the rest of the record for me, because just was shaking and nervous. It was so... Angela. It wasn't a real fish, but I didn't know that, and it looked like it. It was just hanging out of his mouth.
Gross.
But what was funny is how just, in the makeup room, we'd be laughing. I would have been scared if it was a fish. And then they had one.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I have a funny relationship with fish.
That's so funny, then, that you can eat them if they don't look like a fish.
Yeah, if it's like a salmon fillet.
Nothing to do with the... Really?
Yeah,
nothing to do with the taste or the texture or any of that.
No, it's just the eyes and the move. It's the way they move. It's the iridescence. It's all sorts of...
That's my issue with snakes. Yeah. I don't think I could... I don't think... Yeah, you're not eating snakes unless you're in a very terrible situation. But it's the movement.
Yeah.
And it's a fear. And apparently... They did a study, and it's the only animal that we're scared of from birth. We've evolved to be scared of from birth. We don't need to learn to be scared of snakes. All the others, spiders, everything else, we learn the fear of. But snakes, we've evolved that a newborn will shit their pants about a snake. Yeah. It's the way it moves.
Yeah.
And we still don't really understand it.
No.
Whoa.
Let's move away from this.
Scary animals. Somewhere near the top of this podcast, I try and ask if you've eaten anything particularly memorably... I should pick a question if I'm going to ask it every episode that's easier to ask. Have you eaten anything memorably brilliant or awful in the last couple of weeks?
The last couple of weeks? Well, I've been on... this links into what we've been talking about, actually. Yeah. I've been on holiday in Newfoundland. Which is where my mum's family are from. So we go there a bit. And unless you're in St John's in the capital, you cannot be a vegan in Newfoundland.
Right, okay.
I mean, I'm sure you can, but you'd be very hungry. Mm-hmm. And so we had... And this is the other thing as well, where I'm not an ideological vegan, because we went... My boyfriend and I are both very much on the same page with this. We know... What it comes from is we know we want to do something, right? And I do believe that by eating meat just for 2 weeks a year, that's... You know, we're doing our bit.
Yeah.
And also, I don't have kids.
Yeah.
Huge. Which is a huge thing in terms of your environmental footprint. It is. You know. And so I just think, do you know what? If I do have 2 weeks off where I eat some meat and I eat some fish, I'm not going to feel guilty about that.
No way.
Because I'm not an ideological vegan.
No.
And so when we were there, we ate a lot of fish because, Newfoundland is a fishing place. That's what their entire industry is built on. And it's straight out of the water onto your plate, and it's some of the most beautiful...
Mate, if I go somewhere where what they do brilliantly, food-wise, if I'm travelling to a bit of the world that I'm unlikely to go to often, or, you know, especially if it's the only time I'll probably ever go there, and the thing they make is meat-based or fish-based, and that's their thing, I'm going to fucking try it.
Yeah.
Just out of a sense of adventure, not out of a sense of... no options. Even if there is vegan options, I want to try the thing.
Yeah, that's it. When you're in a place, you want to... And that's just
you've got one life and you're curious.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you can't be eating in a mindful way generally the rest of the fucking time.
I think it's just about doing your best. Yeah. And do you know what? If my best isn't good enough for you, well, I'm not doing it for you.
No.
You know?
Wow, beautifully.
I'm doing my best for me.
Can I have that on a fucking t-shirt, please, anyway? Just hang up, in front of my... face every day when I wake up.
What I'm just fed up with being judged. You know, in our job, we're judged everything we do, every place we go, you know, from... Yeah. And I think, wait a minute, my job is to be judged about whether I'm funny or not. I'll let you have that. Yeah. But everything else, just fuck off, leave me alone.
It is so weird that comedians... This has got nothing to do with eating, I don't think, but who gives a shit?
Mm.
I think it's so funny that comedians have become kind of moral arbiters in a way. We're asked our opinion on, obviously, the news. I mean, that's like a massive part of what you do. But also just in terms of, we're gone to for our opinion on the stuff. I got asked to go on stuff in Edinburgh that was like, oh, can you talk about unwanted touching during the Fringe? And I was like, on a TV show, I was like, no. I'm all right, actually. Not today. Sorry. Yeah. I'm so busy. I haven't really got any... They were like, have you had any experiences during this Fringe? I was like... Oh, Christ. I was God, it comes with everything.
But it's also just, I didn't come into this to be a spokesperson for anything. Mm. The only thing I'm a spokesperson for is me, in a way. Yeah. And then I get that hideously wrong sometimes. And it's little things like, I got a, earlier this year, I had an accident with a hot water bottle, right? And I've got, well, you can see now, like, I've got these scars and they're sort of,
so I've got like third degree burns.
Yeah, proper burns. And I tell you what, they're worse on my tits. I mean, it's quite funny in some ways. But
it happened
and I tweeted about it because I tweeted like, people, if you've got a hot water bottle, seriously, put it in the bin.
Yeah,
put it in the bin, or please, I know nobody takes any notice of the put some cold water in first thing, or, you know, make sure you don't fill it straight from the kettle. But let me tell you, because all that happened is I filled it, it gurgled, it erupted in my face and chest. And I got third degree burns, ended up in a burns unit, like from a hot water bottle. So I sort of tweeted about that. Thought no more of it. And then I just got a week of phone calls from like, do you want to be on Vanessa Felt's programme talking about, I know, I don't want to be the spokesperson for hot water bottles.
Or fucking burn victims.
Or burn victims, or any of that,
not,
you know.
Yeah, I'm not a go-to, but when we're not all looking for a fucking niche.
Yeah. Oh,
Jesus
God.
Christ.
So, yeah, it's just, it does, you do feel like there's a responsibility of being, I suppose, slightly in the public eye.
I do think it's, I remember getting spoken to a couple of years ago by someone, a journalist who was really interested in him. At the time, a very proportion, a high proportion of comedians were going vegan or, you know, eating environmentally, shall we say.
Right, yeah.
Or caring about the environment or talking about it in their comedy and or doing it. And there'd been like a surge in it. And I was like, I just think that's, you know, we're constantly in a situation where we're looking at the world and trying to look at it for, on a, we're looking for humorous angles on awful things a lot of the time. So I just don't think that's a coincidence. I think we're, I don't think we're at the vanguard of anything. I don't think we're
just we're so observers. That's our job, is to be observers, to find the funny in it. And while you're looking for the funny, you find other stuff.
Exactly. And also I think what was funny about that was I was like, it's not comedians that there's more of, it's young people and some old comedians
like me.
We're just copying what the
young
what
people
the
do Gen because X that's apparently
millennials
what
are doing. Yeah,
I find it. It's so, the whole being judged thing and what you say. So I worry about. I did a panel show a little while ago, and I won't say which one it was because then people look for it. It's a panel show I did, and there was a bit in it where it really served a thought I had that was funny to say that I was vegan.
Yeah,
right. To serve this little bit, and it ended up being a really funny little bit. But I've worried ever since that when that goes out, people will be like, you're not a proper vegan.
Yeah.
You're not. Because I know they will. And it's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know.
I got booked for a vegan festival, like a vegan festival that wanted some comedy on. And, you know, who knows? It was in Scotland. It was a while ago. And I replied to the request, you know, with the usual questions and found out it's a decent fee and stuff. And I was like, look, it's my birthday weekend, but I can turn this into a holiday and bring my son and stuff. So let's go for it. You should know, though, at the time I was a lot more closer to a vegan than I am now. But I was like, you know, I'm a bit flexible on this. Like, I don't go hungry. And at the time I was like, and my mum just doesn't get it.
So I'm
eating dairy
for
when
a
I'm
quiet life.
Yeah. Just gonna make her happy. don't want to rock the boat. And they just didn't reply, and that was it. I was cancelled, but no one ever said anything to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. But it's that thing, you know, you say the word once and that's it, then you think you're in.
I don't know, it's very speciesist or whatever the word is for me to, and I was brought up, my dad was a type 1 diabetic who was diagnosed with diabetes in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And from that point till he died in 2008, had porcine insulin.
Right.
Because that was the only one that worked for him.
Yeah.
Now, had he not been able to have that, or that testing hadn't been done, he would have died at 7 years old and I wouldn't be here today. So I have a relationship with it where I go, well, maybe that's selfish of me to say that, but I wouldn't be here if there hadn't been some animal testing for medicine.
Yeah.
And I just can't say I'm against it.
No, I'm not against it. And also I'd go so far as to say, which this will get me some shit, but I will leave it in. I don't think animals are as important as humans to me.
Yeah. I had a profound attitude change.
I don't really love them. Really love them, but
you have to choose. If there's a point where you have to choose, you know. And it's
I don't
very
enjoy
difficult.
Their art. I'm not going to fall in love with one. You can have an incredible bond with an animal, but it's. I think it's fine. God, I can't believe I'm scared about saying
I can't believe we
that.
Have to be...
I can't believe I'm nervous
say
about
it.
Saying I prefer... I think humans are more important than animals.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
But now is... But this is the thing as well about being in the public eye at all. Now, all I'm thinking is, the fucking tweets I'm going to get. Or the... But the bottom
line...
Well,
if you're listening to this and you're fucked off, tell someone else about it.
Yeah.
We're fucking busy.
Yeah. I did have a profound sort of change in my attitude to eating meat.
Did you?
So we did. Yeah. We did Veganuary.
Okay.
And there, so that was in January this year, and that's when we were like, actually, we're managing fine with this, and there's, I can't think of any reason not to carry on. So we carried on.
Great.
And before that, we had weird in our house. When I say we, I mean me and my fella. We had like weird, like we never eat meat in the house. We never, you know, little things like that.
Yeah.
Just the ways to do your bit, but without fully committing to an ideology.
Which becomes a trap, actually. Which becomes with lots of mindsets.
Yeah. And you get embroiled in a, you know, then I am not going to be made to feel guilty if I accidentally eat a prawn cracker. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I am the queen of making myself feel shit about myself. I don't need to add to it. I don't. And when I got my puppy, so I've got a little puppy, and she came to us at 8 weeks old in February. And my bond with her is, and I don't have children as well, and I've noticed my friends that have children and dogs, their relationship with their dog is very different to my friends who don't have children and dogs, right? And there's no getting away from it. Yeah. She's not my baby substitute, she's not my child substitute, but she is definitely somewhere for those maternal feelings that are in me, even though I never wanted children and I'm happy with that decision I've made. There's obviously something in my core that she is now the recipient of.
Yeah,
right.
Love.
Whether she likes it or not.
Love it.
And what I realised is I got to know her, and she was the first, like, I had pets growing up, we had cats and stuff, but as a child, you're not responsible for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the first animal I've been responsible for.
It's huge.
And it's such a, she's got such a personality and such a...
When you were asking me earlier, have you got a dog? And I said no. It's because I know it's as much work as a child, and I'm not ready for another child yet.
Yeah, it's when you first bring them home, it's that overwhelming responsibility. And as not a mother, I would never have the audacity to say it's like bringing a baby home. Mm. But in my life, it's the most responsibility I've had for another being.
Whatever. I genuinely think the only difference in the first year is that the human's going to become a person.
Yeah,
and the dog's going to stay a dog.
Well, what was it my friend said, who has got children, said in some ways bringing a puppy home, and she's also got a dog.
Yeah.
Said in some ways bringing a puppy home is harder, because when you bring a newborn baby home, you put it down, it stays there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you could put a nappy on it.
Yeah, you do get a few months of that, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's like you're a puppy, you've got it running around shitting everywhere.
Oh, yeah, you can't stick a nappy on it.
Yeah.
And my friend makes, do you know Rachel Stubbings?
Yes, I do, yeah.
She makes, for her dog Wilma, who's sadly no longer with us, but she used to make her, I don't know why this is reminding me, but she used to make her a nappy for her when she had her periods.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, when they're...
Just out of pants and an adult sanitary... And a human sanitary towel. That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Well, we have... So my little puppy Tina, she's been spayed.
Yeah.
And after they've been spayed, they have to wear like this, because they have a little scar on their belly, you know. And they have to wear... It looks like a baby grow, right? And you take her out for a walk, and you think, people think I've done this to my dog because she's, you know,
just
my baby.
Just out of eccentricity.
Like, just out of, oh my God, that woman puts a baby grow on her dog. You know, you just want a sign that's saying, this is a medical thing, I haven't put a baby grow on my dog. Do you want to see it? I've kept one of the little baby grows for her.
Right? Yes.
Because when they said they can wear just ordinary baby grows, so I went out, I got one with Valentina Tereshkova on it, the first woman in space. This is a baby grow I bought for my dog.
That is so funny. Oh my God. I love it. Amazing. Hey, it's Jess. I'm interrupting myself. Sorry about that. But I've been lucky enough to be given some irresistible ready meals by the Co-op, who are committing to making their packaging more sustainable and already have done on some of these meals. So, yeah, I got some of these meals and I have my mum around. My mum, Nikki. Do you want to meet Nikki? You're about to meet Nikki. And we shared some of this lush food and had a bit of a chat about sustainability while we were at it. Mum and I have to do a whole episode of this together at some point. But here's a little snippet of what I sound like when I'm talking to my mum. And then when we're done, we'll get back into the podcast. But who doesn't want to hear me talking to my mum, right? We've just had some of the we're having some of the irresistible range luxury cottage pie and vintage cheddar and mac and cheese. I think, do you ever have ready meals at home, mum, even if they're posh? Do you have the posh ones like these?
Yes.
Would you? I know, because...
They look more attractive.
They look more attractive. And they taste... They're tasty now.
Yeah, they look more like as if you'd homemade them.
Exactly.
Particularly that cottage pie.
to be clear, if you're listening to this, my mum is probably the foodiest of all foodies. So for her to be complimentary about... But it's just so convenient. I think everybody's so busy and it's
yeah,
so convenient.
Yeah, beans and a bit of ketchup, that'd be great.
Yeah, lush. A bit of salad on the side if you're feeling very healthy.
Could do.
Yeah.
The salad and shepherd's pie doesn't quite mean... seems slightly strange to me.
Yeah. Oh, you wouldn't have salad with a cottage...
I'd always have beans.
Get the salad out. Get some beans in your life with it.
Yeah,
also, beans come in a tin, which does very little harm to the planet compared to lots of ready meals are packaged in stuff that's
absolutely
bad for the old planet. Whereas this stuff, Co-op are moving towards more and more of their stuff, including these things here being in all cardboard and tin and stuff like that. So
this is
why I'm lucky enough to be being given this stuff to eat up, because they put it in planet-friendlier packaging. So when you're shopping for food, Mum, do you look at what it's packaged in? Or would you say, has that changed in recent years, how you think about whether the food you're buying is packaged?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But only in recent times, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Although I do, living in a small town in Dorset, we do have greengrocers and things like that, so I've always liked buying like things in brown paper bags and I have over the years become very suspect of the vacuum packed vegetables and things like that. As soon as I get them home, I want to let them breathe.
You want to free them.
Free them of their packaging.
Let them breathe.
And of course, nowadays, I'm realizing the impact of all this packaging.
Yeah.
And also how much you throw away.
I know, it's terrifying.
And our recycling at home, I have two big plastic carry bags in our kitchen.
Yeah.
One for paper and
two massive bags
and
for life.
Plastic.
Yeah.
And one for glass. And I would say at least once, sometimes twice a day, we're putting the stuff with paper,
the one with paper and cans
into the recycling bin outside.
Cripes.
That's a lot. And there's only really two or three of us.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just so much packaging.
It's not two or three because my mum and stepdad live with a ghost. It's because my sister has just started university, so she's coming and going.
Well, you do have company.
You have company, yeah.
I won't mention the bottles.
The glass bottles.
Yeah. But we do. I often say, I can't believe we're creating so much recycling.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder how back in the day... There's two interesting things there. One, you've reminded me that when I was little, you used to have to go to the bottle bank, and that was all you would recycle, would be the glass.
Yeah.
And I used to love it. I used to love smashing the glass in the bottle bank as hard as I could.
Yeah.
Very cathartic, especially got a bit of rage to take out. God, you know, I thought I was quite a calm child, but actually maybe I was quite rageful already as a child if I enjoyed that. Also, I think how lovely is it that you live in the countryside and you have access to, you know, greengrocers and stuff. You've even got, like, there's allotments near you and stuff like that.
Yeah, people sell their produce outside their houses.
And eggs. People have chickens, you can
surplus,
buy the eggs.
Yeah.
But, like, the vast majority of people, like, and the people that live in cities, lots of people listening to this just won't have access to that.
No.
So we need, for the good of the planet, big organisations like supermarkets, like Co-op, all do need to be, like, thinking a bit, being sort of committed to making their packaging kinder on the planet. So it's very cool that these guys are. Mum, thanks for eating this food with me and talking to me about eating and buying shopping sustainably, Mum. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I'll let you get back into the podcast now.
So when I sort of realised that she has so much agency to you, so much will and so much personality, and she's a mammal in as much as a pig, a cow, a sheep, or whatever, and I'm sure they have agency and will if you've got to know...
Pigs are supposed to be madly intelligent.
Yeah, and it really made me go, well, I couldn't eat you or any other, and that's why I think for me not having dairy is much more important to me than not eating fish.
Yeah.
So that's why it's hard to sort of, I don't eat meat.
Well, also it's bad for the planet.
It's bad for the planet, but also that, ripping a child from its mother and all of those things that I can have empathy with that because I'm also a mammal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Oh, I fully get it. And even just in the CO2 point of view, that was in the paper the other weekend, I was at my cousin's, so I actually read a Sunday paper for the first time in ages. I might have already said this on the podcast, but I don't care. I'm saying it again. But it's just in terms of CO2, it goes cows, and then it's dairy, and then it's pork, and then it's chicken, and then it's... I can't remember after that.
Yeah.
But dairy's number two.
Yeah.
And so, so you know, I feel.
And it's the amount of water. Have you watched Cowspiracy?
Like, I don't know if I've watched that one. I watched one called What the Health, which fucked me off so much because it was so poorly researched.
Oh, really?
I couldn't. Journalistically, I found it so. I just couldn't bear it academically, right. Journalistically. It was such a badly biased and poorly researched.
This is the problem, isn't it? Whatever you watch tells film. You, but I just feel, to me personally, and I think it's all about what you feel at the end of the day, and you totally. Can't tell someone their feelings are wrong.
Yeah.
And mine is that I can, sort of, be it right or wrong in a listener's head, but to me, I can eat a piece of fish and I don't feel the same guilt as I do if I eat a steak.
No.
Or I drink milk.
I think there's lots of people who live like a vegan, but eat bivalves because, like, you know, mussels and oysters and that, because their sentience is really questionable.
Yeah.
Also, sustainability wise, depending on where you get them, but generally they're in abundance and they really, really help other. If they're being grown, if they're growing somewhere, it's really great for all the fish in the area. Like, is there a brilliant thing to be eating for the planet and for
my friend Michael? You know Michael Fabry?
Yeah,
stand up comedian. He said it's the funniest thing when you think about it. Because he said, so let me get this right. He's like, you'll eat a prawn sandwich, but you won't eat like a beef burger. I said, yeah, that's right. He said, yeah, but when you think about it, he said, when you eat a beef burger, that's a bit of one cow. So when you eat a prawn sandwich, that's an entire village. I was like, yeah, I guess, yeah.
At least you're wiping the whole village out from scrap. You're not like necessarily this entire cow's died just for your tiny burger. You tweeted back in February that you got hearing aids and that you'd only just discovered the sound of people eating.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
Talk to me about it, because I think that's incredible.
Like, I can remember when I was little, people eating, the noise of people eating annoying me. I can remember it just being, even though I know I make a noise when I eat, like we all make a noise when we eat. Sure. Like, well, and I can remember it being really, but not just annoying me, making me angry. Like proper, like, I'm going to punch your face.
Was it parents though?
Because definitely parents.
I think when people have got a noise eating parent, that makes them like, because our parents are just annoying.
Murderous with rage.
Oh, God.
And then I started to lose my hearing, and this went, because obviously I couldn't hear it anymore.
Yeah.
And, and then I got a year ago. I started losing my hearing when I was about 18, and it went gradually. And I sort of, but I could cope with lip reading and just getting by, you know.
Wow.
And then in about 2 years ago, it just rapidly started going.
What's it about?
I had recurring glue ear throughout my childhood and into adulthood as well. So I still had grommets in my 30s, And then I got something called tympanic sclerosis. So it's where you have sort of repeated ear infections your whole life.
Yeah.
You start to get calcium deposits on your eardrum. It just means your eardrum can't vibrate anymore because they're really heavy on the eardrum. So suddenly I had these calcium deposits and that was it. My hearing just started really going. About a year ago now, I got these hearing aids and of course just opened up the world. And it's so amazing.
Incredible.
Until I was sat next to Matt. So emotional. I sat in the... Have you seen the videos of when babies get...
I've seen one or two, yeah.
Oh, my God. But it was like that. I sat in the audiologist's office and he put them in the first day. I was just testing them to see, you know. And he put them in and I was like, okay, this already feels different. Like, there's a different sort of... you can hear the atmosphere, right, in the room. That sounds weird, but... Because I had a dead... everyone was dead before. And then we were sat chatting and I could hear a woman's voice. And I was like, am I getting some feedback or something on these? What's going on? And he's like, that's my colleague in the corridor. I'd never heard somebody in another room. And I just burst into tears.
Oh.
I was like, I can hear someone in the corridor.
Oh,
like, what?
God.
It was so weird.
Oh,
and just that was the first moment. And then I went out into the street and he said, I'm going to walk around the block with you.
Mm.
And this is when I was just trying them. So I wasn't taking these ones home with me. I was just trying them. And then he was going to order me some. So we went outside onto the street. And I, honestly, it was all I could do not just to bawl my eyes out walking down the street because people walked past and I could hear what they were saying. I could hear cars coming.
Wow.
It was so mad, but it was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah,
it was just like somebody just turned the volume up on the world, you know, slam, and it hurt.
Yeah.
And then anyway, I got my hearing aids and just, they've changed my life. They're amazing. Then I just was like, a couple of days after I got them, sat on the sofa and we were eating our dinner watching the telly. And I was like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like,
to Matt,
I was like, why are you eating so noisily? He's like, what are you talking about? And I just realised, like, oh, I can hear you eating.
I thought you were going to say, that's what I wanted to know. Was it that prick on the train with some crisps? No, it was your loved one.
No, it was my loved one. I mean, it is a prick on... The thing is, I can't... Because I know I make as much noise as anyone else over here. You know, we all do. So it's such an irrational thing to make...
It's
like a burning anger. I just want to...
I really like it any time that a woman has a burning anger about anything.
But it's so irrational.
It means I know you're a woman after my own heart.
So irrational.
Delicious.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You've talked in a funny, open and erudite way about your appearance and weight and eating in interviews you've done over the years, so hopefully you don't mind me asking, but have you always had like a good relationship with eating or ever a complicated one?
It's very complicated.
Very complicated.
Very complicated.
I think that's most people.
I think it's most women,
yeah,
for sure.
That's true, yeah, sorry.
That's not to say men don't have their issues, because I know they do.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's mainly for us.
I've had a really, particularly in the last sort of 10 years, really. So when I was in my teens and 20s, I was one of those annoying people. As a kid, I think I just had a really high metabolism.
Right.
And so I could eat one, like, and, you know, my nan used to say I had hollow legs, you know, eat and eat and eat and, you know, just never get chubby or ever get.
Yeah.
And that went on really until my 20s when I first started to put on weight when I so I had quite a lot of mental health issues in my 20s and was on some quite hardcore medication.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the side effects of that is you put on weight.
Yeah, like, and is that because of the drugs or because it increases your appetite?
Both, I think.
Right, fine. Same as I think, because they say that recently they started saying the contraceptive pills that people are always saying made you gain weight. There's no medical reason for it to. It's because people normally go on the pill when they're at the start of a happy relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, of course.
And that is, but I've tried to sort of, with my eating, I've tried to work out what it is. And, you know, people say, oh, you eat when you're depressed, or do you eat when you're happy? And I go, I eat when I have any emotion.
Yeah, oh, me too.
I go, I'm an emotional eater, but it's all emotions. I eat when I'm happy, I eat when I'm sad, I eat when I'm horny.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's like food.
Just really like eating.
Yeah, but it also, I use it, and I know I use it as a sort of self-harm in a way. I know I binge eat. I know I eat lots of things I shouldn't.
But that's because I don't know that... I suppose in a way that's self-harm, but also it's... I suppose that's one way of putting it. It's an emotional suppressant. I don't think people realise that eating does the same thing that booze, fags, drugs... Yeah. Sex for some people, adrenaline things.
It's a short high and then immediate regret.
But also, it's a way of helping you not face your emotions.
Yeah.
It suppresses them. It sort of crushes them down for you nicely. Yeah. And no one, I've never met anyone in my life who can live with facing all of their emotions all of the time.
No.
So we choose our vices. Yeah. I know very few people in my life who eat in a perfect, intuitive way the whole time, and they eat what they want, whenever they want, and they stop when they're full, and they'll have days where they eat loads. I do know a few. Mm. The only people I know who are like that do something else way too fucking much.
Yeah.
We all need something. Or at least to be mindful or kind to ourselves, perhaps, about... that we might need something.
Yeah.
We can't all be in therapy all day and all night.
I haven't got time.
Or the money.
Literally, I haven't got time. And I've done a lot of stuff about, I think I can mention this on here. I mean, yeah. I'm writing a book at the moment. I won't say who it's for or anything because not sure if I'm actually allowed to talk about it. But fine. I am writing a book about, so I did a show a few years ago about my, you know, my relationship and the way I look and stuff. Yeah. And I'm now writing a book about that. And it's interesting, I think, because a lot of my mental illness was to do with the way I looked.
Mm.
And obviously now I'm nearly... Well, it was never diagnosed as that. And I find that it's a tricky one because I think because I probably do have it to a certain extent. But even me saying that, the voice in my head is going, you don't have it, you're just ugly.
Oh, fucking hell, mate.
And that, I can't get away from that. Yeah. And that's a whole... But anyway, that's a whole other thing.
I mean, it does sound like dysmorphia, mate.
Well, yeah. But, you know, I always have that thing in the head, but what does a doctor do if you go in and say, I think I've got dysmorphia, and you're actually ugly? Are they going to tell you that? No. So, yeah, but that, I'm just telling you what's in my head. But when I was younger, and I had it... I was doing insane things. I would, on public transport, I would apologise to the person sitting opposite me because they had to look at me for a journey. That's what I was doing, which is insane. I know it's insane. And I had a lot of treatment at the time. But, of course, that the outcome of that treatment was... And I would self-harm when I was younger. So that's the thing that I did. And then as I got older and through treatment and stuff and through medication and therapy and all sorts of stuff, I started to... Get better's not the right phrase. I started to manage it.
Yeah.
And you manage it in different ways and you gain confidence. And I do think you hit 30... And something changes in
you
where you just go, none of this shit matters as much as you think it does. And I'm going to be 43 next month, but I know that it doesn't matter, but it still does. So,
yeah.
And I don't know how much of that is because I'm sometimes on telly.
Yeah.
And
you've got a job where people are looking at you.
It doesn't help. And where people do think it's okay to comment on your looks and your weight and all that thing. And I'd love to say to you, right, what I really want to be able to sit here and go, I'm an overweight woman, right? And I want to own it. I want to be okay with it. But you know what? I'm not.
Yeah.
And I find the pressure of having to be okay with it hard.
I think it's some of the times, I think, especially when you're, it's not just that when you're on telly, you're in the public eye, or you've got a job that means being looked at. I spend a lot of the time I have with my shrink, which isn't that much, you know, I talked to her every couple of weeks, talking about that at the moment, about trying to reconcile myself to the fact that I've got a job that requires being looked at. And because I've chosen not to care very much about what I look like.
Yeah.
And that's how to get on and enjoy my life. It can't be very high up my priority list. And I think where the conflict comes in is where you not only are doing all these things as part of your job, and this is true for both of us, but you're also, you know, an out feminist, ultimately. You know, you're an intelligent woman who's part of a sisterhood.
Yeah.
And it does feel sometimes like feminism's asking you to look at yourself and love yourself to the point where you fancy yourself.
Yeah.
And I think it's asking a bit too much.
It's asking way too much.
And if you're a bit more realistic, if you're a bit more realistic in being, I've got a bit of my show where I say, I don't look in the mirror and go, bleh. Some days I do. But most days I just check, look at it and go, that'll do. I'm fucking busy.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's as much as I can manage.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that there aren't still days. And I've just done a whole fucking show about my body and about enjoying growing my body with weightlifting and getting a bigger body and starting to love that. But just this week, someone sent me some photos through of a podcast I'd done, and I had PMT, but I blubbed for it. I just angry, fucking angry crying for a day.
So I have done, over the last 10 years, I've done these mad diets, lost lots of weight, and briefly felt better, but because I've done them through a mad diet, you know, I've done the Cambridge diet more times than I care to, and it's fucking dangerous.
They're all fucking horrible.
It is fucking dangerous, toxic place to be.
Yeah.
But what happens when I do it, I noticed, so you lose lots of weight really quickly.
Yeah.
Right? So I lost 4 stone in 2.5 months.
Fucking hell.
Which is insane. But that's what happened. And I'm walking around, but do you know what? Not one person ever went, you're right, you've lost that weight really quickly.
No.
All they did was tell me how great I looked.
No, don't like it.
And in my head, I'm like, well, this is this is great. I'm being told how great I look all the time. Yeah. But how dangerous is that to go, oh, you know, you're doing that really dangerous thing that's really bad for you.
Well, it looks also great. What you're literally saying, and the worst thing is it's a compliment and it's intended as a compliment and it is received as a compliment. So it's the most toxic, psychological abuse, but given in the kindest intended and kindest received way. And you don't realise the damage it's doing until you've been in the cycle long enough that you realise that the cycle is a cycle of perpetual failure and pointlessness, of starvation followed by binging, of any of those diets, especially those ones. And I have to be very careful because of the listenership of this podcast, but I will leave this in. But if you don't know what that Cambridge diet is, it's one where you have dust, mainly dust, isn't
it? And milkshakes. Shakes and bars and nothing else.
Yeah, you really, really are.
It's a ketogenic diet.
And you pay a lot for it and they send it to you and stuff.
Yeah. And the thing is, you end up on these Facebook groups where everyone's telling you how well you're doing, how great you're looking and how,
The other thing is with that, every single compliment that you give someone who's lost weight is you are saying, oh, well done, I prefer you now, you're smaller.
But I find myself doing it. I do it to people. I go, you look great, have you lost weight?
But we intellectually know that that's because we've been indoctrinated over generations.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. I was in Asda the other day, talking about pervasive diet culture. I was in Asda and over the Asda radio station that they're playing over the tannoys, it was all about... you deserve a treat while feeling a little bit yucky and want to eat something that's low-cal but still tasty. And it was all about calories. It was all about you can only have something nice for pud if you've earned it. It was all the language of reward, earning, punishment even. And it was all done in such a jocular way. But I thought, fuck off. Families are walking around here. This is going in day and night. Even if you are in the middle of a conversation, that's going in. Post-hearing aids, that's going in subliminally at the same fucking time. We're constantly being told that we're better if we're smaller. So it's no wonder that's still the mindset. There's no judgment. I think it takes massive bravery to say, I'm not down with it yet. I'm not down with my body yet. But don't say never, say never. I think it's a journey.
You know, I think I'm funny when I need to be funny. I think I can be eloquent when I need to be eloquent. Yeah. I think I can, you know, my voice is the thing that I'm most confident in. And if I could just have a job where it's just my voice and my words, great. But we live in a world where that's just not possible anymore.
That's not going to be possible for anyone, I don't think, going forward as well. I mean, joke about picking a job where you're being looked at all the time, but we're in a world now where, because of social media, everybody's being looked at all the time.
And because when you're everything. Talking about, you know, teenagers say they're used to having their pictures taken. Now, I had a real thing when I was a teenager, because I was so deeply unhappy with how I looked, that I would, there are hundreds of any photographs of me as a teenager. And this is a genuine thing. My dad used to go mad. My dad loved taking family photos. He'd be out with his camera and I would always run out the frame and never. And one day he got so exasperated because I would never let him take my photo that he just went, what if you get kidnapped and I have nothing to give to Crime Watch?
Oh, God, I love it.
Sheer frustration. When I do look at, and that was on my 19th birthday. I remember my dad had come to visit me. And he took so there's a photo of me and my dad on my 19th birthday. And I look at that photo now and I see, I mean, I was so thin, so thin and so pretty. I can say that now because she's like another girl, right? And I look at her, but when you look at what I'm wearing in that photo, I'm 19 and I've just got big like shoes on, big baggy clothes, just hiding everything. Hiding my hair all over my face. Just hide it. I just so badly want to go to that girl and go, mate, this is the best you ever, you know, like, but you can't, you know, and that just shows that how it's such a thing in your head.
It does such a thing in your head. But in the same way, you can't watch your own show, you can't read your own work, you can't, you know, you can't look at yourself like anyone else is ever looking at you. But does that not make you think maybe then that 70-year-old you is going to look at a picture of you now and be like, mate, please, I wish you were happier.
I mean, I've had therapists say that to me, like, you know, go project forward 40 years and have that conversation with yourself now. But, you know,
we can but try.
Yum in my tum.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? Ooh. Some sort of quick fire ones.
Because my family in Newfoundland, I've eaten a fair amount of moose.
Nice. Does it taste like you'd imagine a moose to taste?
It's sort of gamey, my family, and this is the other thing as well, where I could not go to my family in Newfoundland and say, by the way, I'm a vegan now.
Yeah.
Because they would laugh me to death. And also, because they are very sustainable in the way they eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they will hunt a moose.
Yeah.
But that moose, they will use every single bit of it.
Yeah.
They will, my uncle has a canning thing in a shed. They can it up for the winter.
Yeah.
Because they're living in a place where it's minus 20 and 6 feet of snow in the winter, yeah, right? They need to have their meat and they need to have their lard and their salt and their stuff to keep them going.
Wow. So,
yeah, I've eaten moose. I've eaten, what else have I eaten that's really weird? I'm not very adventurous. That
counts. I think moose counts as the weirdest thing. No one's ever said moose before. I've been doing this for a while now. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Oh, a 25-second rule.
Perfect.
Five-day rule.
Correct answer. Is there any particular one thing you go to with a hangover?
Oh, crisp. Like, ready-salted crisp.
Ready-salted what? Walkers?
Has to be Walkers ready-salted. Right. Or other will do, but if it's Walkers, there's usually Walkers ready-salted in the house. Crisps and Diet Coke.
And Diet Coke.
I gave up smoking nearly 10 years ago and instantly replaced that
with Diet Coke.
And that... I have found Diet Coke harder to stop than cigarettes.
Oh, really?
I cannot give it up.
Oh, God.
I go through phases of going, I know it's really bad. I know there's nothing good in this thing I'm putting in my body every day. Nothing good in it.
But it's really good.
It's delicious. With a hangover, nothing else will do, you know.
Say scrum-diddly-umptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrum-diddly-umptious.
An Uber and a normal taxi both become Transformers and start a massive fight, but it's also smashing up everything in its path, lots of civilian casualties, getting hit with rubble and lasers and probably one-star reviews for slamming doors too hard and offers of terrible jokes and casual racism, getting whipped around like shrapnel. It's carnage out there, Angela, but luckily it turns out you can stop it. Weirdly, it does have to be you by doing a nuke bunkathon. You've got to build a whole nuclear bunker, because I know you're into
that. Oh, yeah.
Just with your hands, and then swim up and down the channel 4 times. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. The Uber and the taxi transform back into a nice, helpful, harmless Uber and relatively harmless. Let's all get into it. Uber or taxi again, and you, your reward is the adulation of all humanity for all time. You've saved everybody. You've gone down in history for doing this amazing act of heroics. But your reward in the moment, in that kind of like post massive exertion, but then you've also had a shower or whatever, a chance to relax. But you know when you're really hungry, your reward is the feast of your dreams. I don't want anything in it to be ethical, healthy, or possibly even it can be whatever. It doesn't have to be. I don't want you to think about outside of even of consequences, just in the moment what your feast of your dreams would be. I want to know what you'd eat, what you'd drink, and if there's a who, with, and where, then who, with, and where. And again, those people don't have to be possible or available, just your dream scenario.
So, okay, in that case, I'm in Newfoundland.
Because
it feels like home to me. A lot of family there, and it's home, and I love it there. And because I'm in Newfoundland, but also because it's one of the best things you can eat, and it's something I'd only eat in Newfoundland because of my weird eating rules, I would have a big, fat, off-street poutine.
Ooh.
And until you've had poutine from a van on the street in St. John's, I mean, it's just with gravy and cheese curds and bacon bits on the top. And I would have a really nice, hoppy, fizzy pint of ale.
Ooh, a good ale.
A good craft beer. Ooh. A nice, not too strong, like nothing over 4%.
Right,
nice, tasty. Hoppy, tasty ale.
Nice.
And a big fat poutine. Oh, can you tell I've just been to Newfoundland?
I love this. Sounds amazing. And who are you having there?
I'm having all my Newfoundlander family are so much fun, and their accents are just musical, and I just love.
Is it Fargo? Is that where the new Fargo?
Kind of.
Well,
Fargo is sort of Minnesota, for example. It's a state.
Okay.
So Newfoundland is Canada, but it's like a little island off the coast of Canada, and it's so hard to explain. We went to a barbecue and I was there, and I sat and I recorded two of my cousins just chatting, just because their accents are so lovely, so I can listen to it every now and then, because it's kind of Irish, their accent.
Oh, right.
So my granddad, who lived over here, everyone thought was Irish,
right?
But he was a Newfoundlander, and their voices to me just it's so comforting and so. And what makes me not many British people really go to Newfoundland. Very, you know, it's not somewhere a big holiday destination for British people. And so it's the only place that I've ever been where people think I'm posh. And it's so funny because they'll go, me and Matt will be sat in a restaurant, you know, and they'll be like, oh, your accent. So, you know, and they want us to speak and go.
So
and
funny.
I have to say to them, you know, I'm I'm scum. Like,
I'm scum.
I've got a proper, like, estuary, horrible, whining.
You're not scum.
I love that they think I'm posh. But, you know, so, yeah, Newfoundland is where I've been with my family, having a poutine and a beer.
What a lovely answer. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. This has been so much fun.
That was a juicy one, right? Follow Angela. She's at Angela Barnes on social media, and go to her website, angelabarnescomedy.co.uk, for her tour dates. Please come and see Hoovering Live in Thirsk at the Podcast Social Club on the 23rd of November. Be my patron for exclusive mini episodes from live shows. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and follow the podcast all over social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on there as at Jessica Foster Q, and send me a message longer than a tweet, or to see all of my live dates, including my Hench tour dates, please head over to my website, jessicafosterq.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by the brilliant Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.